All right, well, let's take our Bibles this evening, if you turn with me to Genesis chapter number 31. Genesis chapter 31, we've been spending some time in Genesis 31, and we know that it is the separation between Laban and Jacob. Now, we come, really, as we look at the end of Genesis 31, to what it seems to be a peaceful ending in this encounter between both Jacob and his father-in-law, Laban. And in this passage, we find, we're going to read in just a moment, that they make a covenant. And we must read this ending, these ending verses, if you would, carefully, to identify what was truly going on. And to be honest with you, as we look on the surface, it seems, oh, it all ends well. Laban is happy and Jacob is happy, but I really don't think that's the case. As a matter of fact, we see that Laban is simply Laban, but Jacob has been changed. Something happened to Jacob in Haran. I would put it this way, that when Jacob came to Haran, he was just like Laban. But when he left Haran, he was more like Jacob. In other words, what God wanted to be, and we know in the subsequent chapters, God would change his name to Israel, and we'll see how that will happen. You see, on the one side, here at the end of this chapter, you have Laban, who we will call a hypocrite, and on the other side, you have Jacob, who we will call the humbled. And so as we read this chapter, notice we'll pick it up where we left off in verse number 43. Notice what the Bible says, Genesis 31, 43. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do? What can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have born? Now therefore, come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made an heap, and they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Gajar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galil. I like Jacob's name better, just so you know. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galil. And Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. And Jacob swear by the fear of his father Isaac. And Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. I want to preach this evening a message that I've entitled The Hypocrite and the Humbled. This is truly what we find in this chapter. Now, it would seem to us as we read on the surface, and we would just read it for the sake of the story, we would see that, okay, well, this is good. It seems that both Jacob and Laban are making an effort to be at peace with one another. But I think we would examine that as we read the words of Laban, it was not so. Laban is still a hypocrite. He is still deceptive. He still seems to have an agenda, as we see in those words. You see, the actions of this hypocrite Laban in this passage is the evidence of a hardened heart. while the actions of the humbled in Jacob is the evidence of a softened heart. And remember, as we've been talking, since Jacob arrived in Haran in Genesis earlier, chapter 28, we find Jacob came as a deceiver, as a trickster. He came, he left, remember, Canaan because he had lied to his father. He had deceived and tricked Esau, his brother. He had lied to his father Isaac, and as a result, his brother was so upset with him that he was going to kill him. And so Jacob decided to leave, and his mom sent him away to Haran with Isaac's blessing for him to find a wife. And so when Jacob came to Haran, that was the way he was. And God was doing a work in the life of Jacob to bring him back to a place of humility and a place where he could serve God in a way that he did not before. And we find that this process in Haran would be a process that would humble Jacob. And we made the point, which is very important, we ask ourselves this question: what is the work that God is doing in our lives today? I'll tell you what God is doing in our lives. He's trying to humble us. And he will use things in our lives to do that. And we saw in the life of Jacob that the goodness of God would humble Jacob. And we know that's a biblical truth. We also find that the chastening of the Lord would humble Jacob. What Jacob did to his father and to his brother in Canaan was done to him in Haran. And God was chastening Jacob as a result. But we also know a third thing, and that is the trials of life would humble Jacob. Those three things are true in the life of Jacob. And so God has been taking Jacob through. He's been blessing Jacob, despite Laban. He has been chastening Jacob and showing him the man that he was. And he's also allowed trials to come in the life of Jacob to get Jacob to the place of humility. And so when you leave this place in Haran, you find a Jacob who's been broken. But by the way, that's a good thing, by the way, for us to be broken. And so the heart of Jacob has been broken up, has been softened, while in this passage we find the heart of Laban has been hardened. Now I want to consider three points this evening. First of all, we consider the action or the actions of the hypocrite. Now, what is interesting is if you remember how our last study ended, Jacob basically confronts Laban and tells him, "You lied to me. You've changed my wages 10 times. I have served you for 20 years." And remember, he takes him through history. He says, "I worked for Rachel, you gave me Leah. And then you made me work another 7 years for Rachel. And then after that, you bargained with me and you said, appoint to me your wages. And then for the last 6 years, you've changed my wages 10 times. And so as Laban came to Jacob, he basically told Jacob, "You've stolen from me. You've taken that which belongs to me." And Jacob kind of confronts Laban and says, "No, the opposite is true." And so now, Laban, he sets himself on a mission to prove that Jacob took from him. And so what was he looking for? His images, his gods. And so he's convinced that Jacob took those gods. Now we know Rachel did, unbeknownst to Jacob. Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen the images of her father. And so Laban goes everywhere and he looks for those things. He finds nothing. And so I can see Laban coming out of the tent. Jacob sitting there and says, "Where is it? What I've taken from you. Show it to me. Bring it here. Let's place it before the ground so that everybody else around us can see what I've taken from you." And Laban has nothing. And so Jacob confronts Laban and says, "As a matter of fact, you have cheated me. You have taken from me what was rightfully deserved of me." And so Laban, being confronted, now tries to make peace. You see, the hypocrite, the deceiver that's been caught, is now going to do everything he can to make the situation work and to not look like a fool. And that's exactly what we find Laban in this passage. And so I want us to examine the action of this hypocrite. Laban now, in verse 43, proposes a covenant between him and Jacob. Now notice again verse 43, "And Laban answered and said unto Jacob." By the way, he had nothing to say. He could not answer Jacob. And so he says, "These daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have borne? Now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. Now we first observe that it was Laban who proposed this covenant. And on the surface, okay, Laban has been caught and he's trying to make this right. No, he's not trying to make it right. You see, Jacob had just finished exposing the injustice of Laban. And as a result, Laban was left with no choice but to try to make peace for his wrongdoing. Had Jacob not spoken the truth, Laban would not have been so eager to make this covenant of peace with Jacob. You see, the words here we find that in verse 44, Laban tells Jacob, let us make a covenant. Now, this sentence here, let us make a covenant. During those days, this practice was common in the establishing of a covenant. It would be like today, writing a contract where we both sign an agreement. The two parties at that time would take an animal and they would cut that animal, divide that animal into pieces. And what they would do is they would place the pieces, lay down the pieces in a row on each side. And so, understand, the two would come and they would say, all right, whether it was the fowls of the air or one of their cattle or a goat or whatever it was, they would cut the pieces and they would lay them down on one side, and then they would lay the other pieces down on the other side. And so what they would do to make this covenant is they would both of them stand beside one another, and they would walk both of them together between those pieces. And basically the message of that was saying this: as we are walking with those pieces, if we do not keep this covenant, may we end up like those pieces on each one, on each side of us. That was the contract. That was this covenant that was made. The covenant is explained in Jeremiah 34, verse 18, where the Bible says this: and I will give the men that have transgressed my covenant, which have not performed the words of the covenant which they had made before me, when they cut the calf in twain and passed between the parts thereof. God is judging Israel because he says, that's exactly what you did. You cut the calf, you put him on each side, and you walk between those two. He says, but you've not kept that covenant. And then he says, and pass between the parts thereof, the princes of Judah and the princes of Jerusalem and the eunuchs and the priests and all the people of the land which pass between the part of the calf, I will even give them into the hand of their enemies and into the hand of them that seek their life, and their dead bodies shall be for meat unto the fowls of the heaven and unto the beasts of the earth. And so God says, because you have not kept my covenant, you're going to end up like those pieces. And so when two men would walk between, as Jacob and Laban would make this covenant, they would walk between those pieces, and they're making this agreement that if they do not keep this covenant, the judgment of God would come upon them and they would end up like those two pieces. And so this would be the equivalent for us to signing papers today of agreement. And if today in our vernacular, if someone doesn't agree, a lot of times those people are taken to court and so on. But we understand here that Laban is the one who requests for this covenant to be made. Now, I want us to examine the hypocrisy of Laban. I want us to consider several things about Laban in this passage that he tried to do by bringing forth this covenant. First of all, we find that Laban tried to belittle Jacob. He tried to belittle Jacob's action. Notice in verse 43 how Laban speaks to Jacob. He says this. He says, these daughters are my daughters. He says, these children are my children. And these cattle are my cattle. And what can I do this day unto these, my daughters, or unto their children, which they have borne? And so clearly here, we find that Laban is trying to belittle Jacob. Laban still was not thinking correctly. Remember, Jacob had worked for both Leah and Rachel for 14 years. The children that Leah and Rachel bore unto Laban were not his either. You see, what was Laban doing? He was pretending to give something up that was dear to him in order to make this covenant work. However, Laban was not giving anything in this covenant that did not already belong to Jacob. But he made it seem like he was conceding something. Now we're going to make this covenant, but you know, as you can see, these are my daughters, and these are my children, and these are my cattle, and we could say, no, Laban, no, you don't understand. Jacob worked for those Rachel and Leah, and actually those are his children, Laban, and those cattle are his cattle. He worked for those. These were your wages, his wages that you changed 10 times. But Laban seems kind of pretends, and by doing so, he belittles Jacob, and he basically tells Jacob, nothing you have did not come from me. And that's how he begins in this covenant journey, by belittling Jacob and by propping himself up. By the way, that's what a hypocrite does. You see, a hypocrite cannot go upon his record. He has just been confronted by Jacob. And therefore, because he cannot stand on his record, in order to elevate himself, he has to belittle the other party. And that's what he does with Jacob. And so we see that he tries to belittle Jacob. One commentator put it this way, he says, proposing a peace covenant does not indicate that Laban is repenting of his evil. The preface to the proposal makes that clear. It only says that Laban is in trouble and is trying to desperately get out of it without further loss. You see, Laban's in trouble here. He's been exposed, and now he's trying to get out of it. Now, that's very Laban-like, isn't it? And so we find that, first of all, he tries to belittle Jacob. But secondly, we find that he tries to attack Jacob's character. Now, is it interesting that in this covenant, he throws some shots at Jacob? Like he just almost like he attacks Jacob's character. Now, understand, he is the one that has a character issue. But he's going to try to mar or attack the character of Jacob. Notice what he says in verse 48 and 49. Notice here. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Gilead. And Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. Notice verse number 50. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And as we read those verses, I'm thinking, where did that come from? Like, what are you talking about? If anybody has mistreated Leah and Jacob, it's you, Laban. Now, do you remember what they said? They said to Jacob, our father has treated us no better than slaves. That's what they said. He took away their dowry. He sold them just as he would sell any other slave. And so Leah and Rachel knew that Jacob has treated them well. But you see here, in the midst of this covenant, Laban is trying to attack Jacob's character by saying, make sure you don't take any more wives. Let me tell you this here. I want to say, stop, Laban. What are you talking about? He only wanted one wife, and you gave him two. He only wanted Rachel. He never said he wanted Leah, but you gave him Leah instead of Rachel. And there he is trying to clearly attack Jacob's character. He even says, he says at the end of verse 50, notice, see, God is witness between me and thee. He is almost kind of attacking in the presence of those witnesses and saying, well, I know how you are, Jacob, and I want to make sure that we make this covenant because I don't want you to harm me. Well, wait a minute. Who was trying to harm who? Laban was trying to harm Jacob. You remember, God had to intervene in Jacob before he met, God had to intervene in the life of Laban before he met Jacob, the night before, just a few hours before he met Jacob, to remind Laban that he was not to hurt in any way Jacob. Jacob didn't have to be told that. But you see, that's what a hypocrite does. A hypocrite wants to do certain things, and when he cannot and he is exposed, he tries to pretend that the other person wanted to do the same thing towards him. That's what Laban does. And so understand here, he tries to belittle Jacob. He tries to attack Jacob's character. But thirdly, he tries to place doubt on Jacob's sincerity. Notice in verse 51, "And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee." Now, we're going to see in just a moment who cast the pillar and the heap of stone between them. It was Jacob. Now, notice here, if you go back earlier, verse 45, "And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar." So who set up the pillar there in verse 45? Jacob did. "And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made an heap, and they did eat there upon the heap." Now, okay, so who set up the stone? Jacob did. Who set up the heap of stones? Jacob did. But Laban comes in verse 51 and said to Jacob, "Behold this heap, and behold this pillar, which I have cast betwixt me and thee." And I want to say, what are you talking about, Laban? You see, he tries to turn the tables. He's trying to appear self-righteous. He's trying to appear like he's the man with character, and he has no character. And he says, look, well, you know, he sees what Jacob's done, and he's the typical hypocrite. Well, no, this is between me and you, and, you know, this is absolutely necessary because, you know, I want to make sure that you don't come, verse 52, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. And so he saw that Jacob had built this pillar with this one stone, and then he had built a heap with small stones, and now that was standing between Jacob and Laban. And so now you see, Jacob did that because he knew the intentions of Laban towards him. Laban wanted to do him harm, but here he's trying to reverse that, isn't he? And he says, oh, well, this heap and this pillar, well, you know, make sure that you don't come by this heap onto my side and cause me harm. You see, he tries to place doubt on Jacob's sincerity. But there's one more thing that he does. So we see that he tries to belittle Jacob. He tries to attack Jacob's character. He tries to place doubt on Jacob's sincerity. And number four, he tries to associate himself with deity. Now, let me remind you of this. You remember what Laban was looking for when he chased after Jacob? What was he looking for? The images. Now, Rachel had taken the images. Now, what were the images? They were gods, his gods. And Laban had looked everywhere for his gods. And so he was a pagan worshiper. But here, notice what happens in verse number 53. This is Laban speaking, and he says this: "The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us." Now, what is interesting here is there's a little confusion here in the sentence, and it shows and reveals the ignorance of Laban. The God of Abraham, we understand, is clearly Jehovah God, but then he says, "and the God of Nahor." Now, who was the God of Nahor? It was not Jehovah God. And then he goes on, "the God of their father." So who were their fathers? Where did Abraham come from? Genesis 12, from Haran. That's where Abraham originally came from. They were pagan worshipers. They worshipped idols. They worshipped false gods. And here, you see, Laban is completely ignorant, but he tries to associate himself with deity by calling on the God of Abraham in this peace covenant between Laban and Jacob. You see, they made this agreement in the presence of God by making this vow, as God was witness. If they were to fail this covenant, they would bring upon themselves the judgment of God. But Laban demonstrates how fake he was in this agreement. He did not swear by his gods. Remember that he had sought those stolen images and had not found them. And we made the point, how ridiculous to think that a god could be stolen. But here, you see, he's trying to appeal in the presence of all those witnesses that are looking at Laban as if he's a religious man. You see, he's trying to associate himself with deity. And by the way, a hypocrite will always do that. To justify their actions, they like to include God in it. In other words, they've never sought God in the first place. They've made their decision without God, and therefore they want to kind of tack God on the back end to justify their action. That's what the hypocrite will do. So we find the actions of the hypocrite. But I want to consider, secondly, the action of the humbled. And there's a reason why I say not the humble, but the humbled. Because 20 years ago, Jacob was just like Laban. He was the same man. But guess what? In 20 years' time, he had been humbled. You see, God did that work in the life of Jacob. And now when we read this passage, isn't it interesting that at no point Jacob tries to retaliate to those accusations from Laban? At no point does he do that. Really, we see three things that Jacob does. The first thing we find is his stones. Notice verse number 45. And Jacob took a stone. Now, this is a large stone, and set it up for a pillar. That means that this would be perhaps one large stone that would stand up as a pillar. And then verse 46, and Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made an heap, and they did eat there upon the heap. So we find here that Jacob is going to do this. As Laban is talking and talking and talking, Jacob is going to prove by his actions his sincerity. And the first way he does that is by those stones. The one stone who was stand as a pillar, and then the heap of stones. So you see, there was a stone that was set up as a pillar. The pillar is the sign of a permanent and lasting covenant. It stands as a pillar of remembrance. It is difficult to move, and so it stands there as a reference point. But there's also the stones, or the heap of stones. Those stones were there as a witness. Stones were used because they would endure through the ages. They would be long-lasting. And you find that symbolism often in the Scriptures, where God even at times instructed His own people to put forth stones together and to put forth a memorial so that the next generation would know what took place in that place. And the stones would stand as a testimony. And so you see here, Laban is talking. And Jacob said, okay, let's do something, so that everybody could see the agreement that we're making. Let's put forth a pillar that will stand by way of remembrance for us, and let's build a heap of stone as a witness as we eat upon those this heap of stone, that we remember the decision that we've made. And so as Laban is blabbing and blabbing, Jacob is acting upon his sincerity, and he is demonstrating that he is sincere by this heap of stone. But also there's a second thing that Jacob does, and that is he swears. Now, obviously, the word here for swearing is not the word that we use today for someone that swears. Notice in verse number 53, and at the end of the verse, and Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Now, the word swear here properly means literally to seven oneself. That's the number seven. To seven oneself. It means to repeat this promise or this covenant seven times so as to not forget it. And so when you swear, you're making this promise. You know, often you hear that sometimes children, well, I promise. My kids, when they do something wrong and we say, well, you have to sit there. Well, I won't do it again. I promise. And they'll say it more than seven times, as a matter of fact. But that's the idea here of Jacob making it. This is not just something that is lightly said. This is something that has tremendous implications. This is an oath that was properly done. Notice the Bible tells us in the fear of his father Isaac. And this is referring to the fear that Isaac had of God. And so we find here that the decisions that Jacob made as he built this pillar with the stone and this heap of stones, and as he makes a promise, understand this was not a light-hearted promise. It was a promise that was done in the fear of God, in the fear of his father Isaac. It was not done lightly. The Bible tells us in the book of Proverbs, as we've studied, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord. Now, did Laban have any fear of God? No, he did not, because all we find in this passage is him trying to justify himself. But the words of Jacob, isn't it interesting that in this covenant, Jacob speaks very little? Laban speaks a lot. But what Jacob says has far greater value than what Laban says. All that Laban did with his words was to try to belittle Jacob, to attack his character, to hypocritically associate himself with deity. And he used big, swelling words. It'd be someone blabbing. And it's like, what are you saying? But yet, Jacob is precise in his words, precise in his actions. And so we see his stones, his swearing, but thirdly, we see his sacrifice. Notice verse 44, and this is what is so important about this scene here, and it shows the involvement of Jacob. The Bible says, then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. You see, by the sacrifice of Jacob was confirming the covenant before God. It is interesting to note that it was Jacob that offered the sacrifice and not Laban. Laban was talking a good talk, but he did nothing. He did not sacrifice, nor did he incur any cost to make this covenant. Now think about it. It was Jacob that set up that stone as a pillar. It was Jacob that set up those stones as a heap. It was Jacob who swore by the fear of his father Isaac. It was Jacob who offered a sacrifice of his own flock. And Laban, as a matter of fact, did nothing. He just said words. You see, two different men. In verse 54, then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread. This eating together was a manifestation of the peaceful agreement between Jacob and Laban. And again, it was, think about it, you look at the scene, it was Jacob who provided for this feast. Jacob's response to Laban indicates that Jacob was the one who was genuinely interested in this peace agreement. Do you remember? Laban came to take. And when he found that he was unable to take and confronted with his hypocrisy, he still didn't give anything. It was Jacob that gave. Now, practically speaking, I think that applies to Romans 12 that we've been studying. Avenge not yourself. What are we to do? We find here that Jacob in every way acted in a manner that was pleasing to God. In every way, he is the one that gave the sacrifice, not Laban. He is the one that provided for the feast, not Laban. He is the one who erected those stones, not Laban. But Laban has been all along trying to act like the good guy. And so we find that Laban is the hypocrite, but Jacob is the one who has been humbled by God. And so I want to consider lastly, not only do we see the action of the hypocrite, the actions of the humble, the humbled, but thirdly we consider the separation of the hypocrite and the humbled. Verse 55. Now notice here, if we're not careful, we're going to miss it. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned to his place. There's something missing in that verse. There's no mention of Jacob. The Bible tells us he kissed his sons and his daughters. That's specific. And blessed them. You know what that means? He did not kiss Jacob. He did not bless Jacob. You say, well, men didn't do that at those times. They didn't kiss each other. Oh, yeah. Go back to Genesis 29. Let's look at the first encounter between Laban and Jacob. In Genesis 29, notice if you go with me to verse number 13, Jacob has met Rachel. Rachel runs home to tell her father, Laban, that Jacob is here. Laban goes out to meet Jacob. Notice verse 13. And it came to pass when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him. There it is. And brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. You see, remember, that was Jacob's first meeting with Laban, Jacob's first meeting with Laban in Haran, when Jacob first came to Haran. And now that Jacob is leaving, no kiss for Jacob. No blessing for Jacob. And so we find that all Laban did was take from Jacob. As a matter of fact, remember earlier, Laban said, these are my daughters, these are my children, these are my cattle, which they weren't. And so we find here that Laban pretended to be the one that gave, while he is only the one that took, that tried to steal, that tried to cheat. And so as Jacob went, the only reason why Laban kissed him was for what he could get out of him. And this time, since he can't get anything out of Jacob, he doesn't kiss him. He sends him off. Such is the hypocrite. And I believe this is a good illustration of what the world will do to any person who gives themselves to the world. He went to Haran, and Jacob would find that all the world did to him was take from him and gave him nothing. The world was there to bring him the accolades and the affection at the first. But then we find through the process of time, the world just chewed out and spit him out with nothing. You see, the separation of the hypocrite and the humbled. Jacob came into Haran as a hypocrite, as a deceiver. But God would humble Jacob throughout the years. But Laban remained the same. Laban is unchanged. You know, Laban is an important character in the Word of God. That's why we've been spending a lot of time on there. As a matter of fact, the first time he is mentioned is when he is mentioned in the context of his sister who married Isaac. And the Bible says, and her brother was Laban. Almost like, we're going to talk about him. He's coming, and he's an important character. And often the Bible mentions Laban as Rebekah's brother, just so that we remember the type of man he was, but also so that we remember that that's exactly the kind of man Jacob was until God dealt with him. You see, man left to himself is just like Laban until God deals with us. And when God deals with us, whether it be the work that he does to humble us through the trials of this life, through his chastening hand, or through his goodness in our lives. When we are humbled, we find that God has done a work, and whether Jacob realized it or not, he is a different man. Now, he's not all the way because God still has to deal with him. There's going to be a wrestling match here in a couple of chapters. I'm looking forward to the study. But we find here that Jacob is going through the process here, and the Lord is doing the same in our lives. He is working in our lives. We must be fully aware that God is at work in our lives. We're talking about the Christian must never be passive. Let me tell you something. God is never passive. He is always at work in our lives. And we must be aware of that and allow God to make the changes that need to be made in our lives. And so there's the difference here. We see a good contrast between the hypocrite and the person that's been humbled, the person that's genuine and sincere, and the other person who has remained unchanged. And may the Lord help us to always be humbled under the mighty hand of God.